You're listening to The Higher Ed Marketer, the podcast for marketing professionals in higher education. Join us every week as we talk to the industry's greatest minds in student recruitment, donor relations, marketing trends, new technologies, and much more. If you're looking for conversations centered around where marketing in higher ed is going, this podcast is for you. Let's get into the show.
Welcome to the Higher Ed Marketer Podcast, and today is not only a different episode, it's a special episode, because we are kicking off our weekly book review on Chasing Mission Fit, and today we are doing chapter one here on the Higher Ed Marketer Podcast, but the rest of the book club meetings will be on a LinkedIn Live on Wednesday starting April 3rd. Also, my co-host, Bart Kaler, is not with me today because he is in the middle of his busy season. But I have a dear friend of the show and of Bart and I that is filling in not only as our guest, but the co-host. His name is Chris Raposo. And Chris, welcome to the Higher Ed Marketer Podcast.
Thank you, Troy. It's an honor to be here as a longtime fan of the show. Really looking forward to this one.
Thank you. And the reason why we are having Chris to be a part of this conversation is, A, he has a lot of expertise and experience around discussing the enrollment cliff, both with his job as heading up marketing at Hannon Hill, but also he is the producer and the host of the Education Marketing Leader podcast, which if you're not familiar with, I encourage you to become familiar with it and become a weekly listener. So Chris, you are a longtime listener of this show, and thank you for that. So you know the question that I'm getting ready to ask you to kick off our conversation. And that is, if you could share something that you have learned this week that you think would come across as either interesting or fun for our listeners.
Well, I've known this theoretically for a while, but practically I've applied it this week, and it is that your best ability, regardless of socioeconomic background or educational background, is your best ability is availability. So when Rob Conlin came knocking 2 days ago asking me to co-host this, I said yes without even knowing what I signed up for. But hey, here we are, and I know it's going to be a great show. So every once in a while, don't overthink it. Just go for it, say yes, and then figure it out afterwards when you have it down packed. Okay, guys?
Thank you. And you're giving away some of our internal secrets. When Rob and I were planning this show and he asked me, who should we have? I said, you know, we need to make sure Chris is available to do this because A, my comfort level and B, his knowledge. So without further ado, I want to get into that. The enrollment cliff is real, which is the first chapter of Bart Kaler's book, Chasing Mission Fit. And what we would like to do today, using the book and the study guide as our guide of going through this topic, is to briefly touch on the topic and why it's relevant. My assumption is most listeners pretty much know why it's relevant, but more importantly, make the case as education marketers, we can have a big effect on our institution's ability to get through the enrollment cliff or to be successful within the enrollment cliff by the way that we communicate with our future prospective students. So the first segment of this chapter of the enrollment cliff is real is simply about the reality of the enrollment cliff. Again, we all know that between now and 2037, there's going to be about a 24% decrease in the college age eligible student population. And there's going to be a fight among a lot of colleges and universities on how to get those students to come to their institutions. And the assumption is in certain regions, certain sizes, and certain types of institutions are going to be affected more so than others. So Chris, would like to know as an overview, as you read this chapter of the book, what do you think the overall mission of the chapter was?
The overall mission of the chapter, I believe, is to prepare higher ed institutions, especially the ones that are small and medium-sized institutions, not the R1 schools that everybody knows, that there will be a significant decline in traditional age students happening after 2025. So according to the book, the peak will hit at 4.9 million traditional age students in 2025, and then there's going to be a drastic drop-off. That's why they're calling it the cliff, right? It's going to drop off the available high school students, seniors coming out of United States high schools will significantly drop. So what that means is that these schools that are traditionally dependent on the tuition of traditional age students, 18, 17, 18-year-olds, they have to adjust their marketing strategies to attract some of those traditionally underserved demographics. So just as a little bit of an overview, there will be probably about a drop of 350 to 400,000 fewer traditional age students. And that means there is a significant financial impact for institutions, particularly in the Northeast and in the Midwest, according to my studies and WeChi.
Thank you. Also, there have been about 70 schools over the past 5 years that have already closed. And a concerning point to that is over half of those were faith-based colleges and universities. And that is something that is very near and dear to Bart. So with that being the foundation and the upcoming cliff that's approaching, finding the mission fit student is one of Bart's more, he feels that's the most important thing that an institution and most importantly, the marketing and enrollment teams of the institution can do to help combat the challenges that will be brought with the enrollment cliff. And when we talk about finding your mission fit student, what does that mean to you, Chris?
Right. So when it comes to mission fit students, you really want to know who are those particular students that went through institution before that embody the spirit of the institution, the culture, who know the value of the institution, who have perhaps even become brand ambassadors for you, right? So these are the kind of students that align with the mission and the vision of the institution. You got to ask yourself, you know, what are the qualities? What are their values? What are their aspirations that they had? Why they came to your school and what made them successful? Why did they went out into the world and then not just leave with a degree, but came back as potential donors or even speakers or social proof content through case studies or student spotlights, right? So there's got to be some sort of a connect there between the institution and the students that makes those mission fit students come back and not just move on and make this transactional thing between the school and the person, but more of a, hey, there's a deeper connection there. You're just going to have to find out who are these people, what attracts them, and then how can you get more of those?
So if I understand correctly, and I also believe the book states this very well, in order for us to help identify who our mission fit student is, in case it might be a little different than what we have in our minds, we can go back to previous successful students, our alumni, and figure out their personas and then help from those personas create the new personas that we are going to best connect with. And I think I also heard you say, and this is paraphrasing, the mission of the school and how that connected with those individuals, or making sure that we can create our mission articulated correctly, and that will also help attract mission fit students that are attracted to those missions.
Yeah, that's right. You know, figure out who are these people that are still involved, that come back frequently to your institutions, the people that trust you enough to send their kids back to the school, those legacy students, right? So there's a reason why they're sending back their kids to your school to help them further themselves in their lives. That's the way to figure out which of those students align with your mission, with your vision, and with your values. And then also look at the industries, right? Where do these students come from? Now, if they're not related to the previous alumni, right? So see what companies frequently hire these sort of students that come out of your institutions, or what role gravitates to your schools? Is it a lot of nursing school students that come to your school? Is there something special about your school, right? that attracts these individuals, and then hone in on that and communicate what makes you special in order to attract more of those success stories.
Thank you. So again, we are going through chapter one of Bart Kaler's book, Chasing Mission Fit. And chapter one is The Enrollment Cliff is Real. So we've talked about the reason why there is an enrollment cliff and talked about the importance of identifying a mission fit student. Now I would love to hear a little bit about how to create effective marketing strategies in order to best communicate and connect with those identified mission fit students.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So first you got to figure out what your mission is, right? What sources of information do they frequently visit? Like, what are their watering holes? Where do they go? Where do they hang out? So they could be digital watering holes. They could be physical watering holes. So Bart gives that example of, if you ever watched National Geographic, for example, a bird watcher, for example, right? They don't just go out looking for the birds, hoping to find somebody. They go to where those birds are, or where those particular animals are, which in the savannah is a watering hole. That's why that concept of that comes into play. Now, when it comes to students, right, you got to figure out where do they hang out, and that depends on whether they're Gen Z, Generation Alpha, Millennials, Generation X. You know, they can be in different spaces, just for the sake of this conversation, because right now traditional age students are still Generation C. So they usually hang out on social media. Zimi, for example, you had the guys from Zimi on your show previously, right? Mm-hmm. But that's one of those watering holes where students that haven't even gone to your university yet, they hang out, they talk about the particular institution that they're interested in. And if you implement yourself in there and then share the value, the mission, the vision of your institution with those prospective students at those watering holes, at those social media platforms, then you'll be able to get in front of them without ever having to seek them out just on a whim and spread out and spend a lot of marketing budget on your lead generation through paid media. You do it organically, you go where they are. Reddit is another platform digitally where a lot of people hang out. Bart mentions this in the book, that there's about 52 million users, and a majority of those users are between 18 and 29 years old. And you can create your own watering holes through subreddits like the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign did, right? So you have that platform, but then you create your own little pocket where people can flock to and then discuss things, and you have them right there. I mean, it's still rented land, but at least you get in front of them. And then some of the physical watering holes, you know, you go to barbershops, community centers, faith-based institutions like Bart represents a lot. You go to churches there, right? And then you market your institution there. You get a great example, Bart, about bringing them a box of donuts and just saying, hey, we'd love to bless you. Leave your information. If they want to further collaborate, they can call you. Go to high schools, go to boys and girls clubs, the YMCA, you know, where does the prospective students hang out, and, you know, market to them there. Find them where they are and not just blindly chase them down.
I love the way you described a lot of that. And being in a lot of conversations with Bart, I think the overall message that he wants to give is, yes, we have to maintain our current traditional marketing strategies that we do in higher ed, whereby we're sending emails, we are sending mailers, doing campaigns electronically with digital advertising. But there are also places that might not come to mind that might take a little bit more effort for us to go into, where our mission fit students naturally hang out. And using the analogy of a watering hole, that finding that area where they naturally hang out and becoming part of that community around the watering hole and exchanging information there is more authentic, and we have the increased likelihood of being able to meet our mission fit student at the watering hole that they are naturally attracted to. So I appreciate you going through all of those. He does emphasize, especially for Generation Z, those watering holes are mostly online and easy for us to get to, as Chris, you just mentioned a few of those during your description. So thank you so much.
Yeah, I got a good example there if you want me to share one real quick from a church that I previously attended. in Tampa, Florida. So that's Radiant Church. Shout out to Radiant Church. Radiant Church attracts a lot of Gen Zers, a lot of high schoolers that are about to go to college, a lot of young adults. So what the Southeastern University did, Southeastern University is a faith-based institution located in Lakeland, Florida. So Lakeland is about an hour away from Tampa, right? So what they did, they started a campus on that church to equip the next leaders of the church. So that's how they got in front of those prospective students. They created a watering hole. They went to where they were and didn't ask them to come to Lakeland to drive an hour, right? So they set up shop at the church, made it easy on them. So now they have those additional students that they would have never reached before. And the church has the ability to equip the next leaders of their faith-based organization.
Thank you. And that's a perfect example of thinking a little bit outside of the box, making it very easy for prospective students that might not have been able to attend or participate in your university now has the opportunity to because you went to them and made that of the chapter. And I know that this is something that you lean into, and that is thinking beyond traditional student demographics. And for anyone that is familiar with your podcast, you share and also a proponent for colleges and universities to keep in mind and then market to non-traditional students. And that's based on your personal journey. So we'll love to get your insight and your take from a personal perspective, but also what are some of the strategies that you know other colleges and universities are utilizing and taking into effect with non-traditional learners?
Yeah, absolutely. I was a non-traditional adult learner myself, graduated at the age of 39 from the University of Florida online, and I have a heart for non-traditional students, for the traditionally underserved, regardless of if they're adult learners, part-time online students, first-generation minority, working professionals, or military-connected, right? Some of them are even dual-enrolled students, is what Bart's mentioned in his book. But I think that with the decrease of traditional age student, non-traditional students may become the new traditional students in the future right there. And there is so much low-hanging fruit. For example, there are around 40 million people that have some college but no degree, right? So if you can identify them through going through your CRM to check who attended my institution previously, who only has a year left, target them with success stories, with messages, and show them the value and the benefits of going back to school and finishing the journey and how that better affects their life. So that's a little bit about why it is important. I recently wrote a white paper on the Dermot enrollment cliff and the marketing shift to non-traditional students. But when it comes to marketing them, flexibility is everything, right? As Bart often said, and I remember listening to a podcast episode between him and the late, great Tim Fuller, where they said that your biggest competition isn't another institution for these non-traditional students. Your biggest competition is life itself, because you've got to balance work, you got to balance family, you got to balance all these things, and making sure that you get to class and hitting your grades is probably going to be the least of their worries when it comes to these student demographics. So you got to make sure that you offer flexibility and that you give them a way to accomplish that dream of earning a higher ed degree on their term.
Yeah.
So University of Florida does a good job with that. I mean, it's just one of them, but that's the one that I was attracted to and that I attended.
And the University of Florida is a flagship in Florida. And the way the statistics are coming to us, we would think that they would not have a problem because this enrollment cliff is described not to be hitting the Southeast and some of the Southern states as hard as it does some of the Northern states. But with that said, for a school like that, if they are leaning into it, I think some of our other smaller to medium-sized schools should take note and follow suit. Also, I'd like to say that in the past, these types of conversations we're more for social impact and doing what's right socially. But we want to emphasize that making sure that we look into non-traditional students, whether it's adult learners, whether it's underserved communities, now is more for the survival of your institution. I was listening to the keynote presentation from Hannon Hill, which you had put together, and Dr. Allison Tercio said that, you know, she works at Siena University, which right now is traditionally a white university or a majority white university. And she lives less than half a mile from the university, and her kindergarten child is in a class, and she is the minority as a Caucasian individual. And now that leads Allison and their leadership team to say, hey, this is the way the world is going. We need to make sure that us as a university, for our survival, is making sure that we are prepared, making sure that we are communicating correctly. Again, it's not for social impact. It's for institution survival.
That's right. That's right. So there's, besides the geographic shift, there's going to be the demographic shift, obviously. That's why it's called the demographic enrollment cliff. I love the example that Bart gave in the book about McFarland USA and the importance of embracing diversity, and how that coach, if you haven't seen the movie, he was a high caliber football coach, and he got kicked out of his job because of some issues. And then he ended up in some small town that was primarily from the Hispanic culture. And he tapped into that cultural differences between him and the runners that he coached, because he became a track and field coach because that school didn't have a football team. So he tapped into them. He figured out what speaks to them, what motivates them. And then he drove them to becoming very successful runners, setting them up to run in college, right? Because they otherwise would have probably not had the opportunity to go to university if it wasn't through athletics in that particular town.
Yes. And I wasn't familiar with the movie at all. And the way Bart described it, I need to watch the movie. But more importantly, I think the point that Bart was making is universities can follow that same procedure of making sure that they lean into the people that they are going to attract or would like to attract to make those connections, and not necessarily expecting those audiences to acquiesce to the way the institution normally communicates.
That's right. That's right. And if your institution traditionally had white traditional age students come to their school, don't rest on your laurels and don't fall into that trap and that dangerous business phrase, we're doing it this way just because we've always done it that way. That's not going to work anymore going forward, everybody. Even if you're doing well, like you said, the University of Florida, flagship institution in Florida, right? But even they are looking to diversify their portfolio. So if the big dogs do it, the little ones definitely have to follow suit.
Thank you. And the last segment that I would like to touch upon is around the thought of influencers and the psychographics in student recruitment. And again, we have a way that traditionally we have marketed within higher ed for a number of years. And Bart's making the case that, like the rest of society, higher ed marketing could probably lean in heavily on the thought of marketing to especially Gen Z through influencers. And really, I think, just taking it a step further, learning for each generation how they are influenced, and then speaking to that generation through the way that they are currently being influenced. For example, Gen Z, a lot of their activity is online. And as we know, they make the decisions on most everything that they do based on the influencers that they follow, that they trust, that they feel best represents either who they want to be or represents what they like. And colleges and universities can do the exact same thing.
That's right. That's right. So you got to identify who those social, who those influencers are, right? They differ from one end of the spectrum to the other. So if you have, like you said, if you have Gen Z, it's the social media influencers like Mr. Beast. I didn't know who Mr. Beast was until I started getting on YouTube and experimenting myself. But when it comes to baby boomers and Generation X, word of mouth is definitely the way to go, right? So social proof is what you want, success stories and that sort of thing through case studies. And faith-based institutes, it's 100% the pastor that's going to influence those prospective students who go to school. Like I give the example of Radiant Church in South Tampa, when they collaborated with Southeastern University, the congregation may have never gone or never considered Southeastern University because it's an hour away. University of South Florida is in the backyard of in Tampa, big school, right? But now they brought their institution to them and now they got their students. But you, of course, you have to figure out who influences whom, in what ways should you speak to those prospective students. For example, Bart gave another example in his book about his or your episode with Mark McCrindle, the founder of McCrindle Research, author of Generation Alpha, Understanding Our Children and Helping Them Thrive. And it's like, unlike the Generation Z, you have that 8-second filter, you know, Generation Alpha is a little bit more willing to deep dive into content if it captures their attention and their interest. But how do you capture their interest and attention? And he mentioned the term edutainment. So it's a blend between education and entertainment when you serve out your messages, right? So that's Generation Alpha. It's to come. I mean, they're still a little young. They were born between 2012 and 2024. But hey, you know, time flies. So they'll be knocking on your college door before you know it. And then, of course, Generation Z, the digital natives, we're born between 97 and 2012. And they grew up with social media and smartphones. So fast and fluid is key for them, right? So if you don't catch them within 8 seconds, like Bart said, the 8-second filter, you're going to lose them. So you want to make your content brief, you want to make it compelling, and you want to capture them through like TikTok, Snapchat, and YouTube short style kind of advertising.
Thank you, Chris. And I would also like to point out that a lot of institutions have the luxury of having famous people that are alumni. And by all means, please lean into that. But for those who don't, or to not be restricted to that thought, I think it also can be good for you to think what famous people out there that you could partner with that best or authentically represents the mission that also has a following that you can link your brand up to. And I think you would be surprised if you do a little deep dive on the influencers that have large followings of your mission fit type students that you could partner with to put your institution in the best light.
Yeah. And I just want to caution people to not just focus on those celebrities. University of Florida, Tim Tebow is huge, right? But he's a unicorn. As a non-traditional adult learner, I can never attain that, right? That's out of reach. So it could be discouraging to those prospective students that are adult learners that are going through it with their baby crying at 4 a.m. and they have to get their schoolwork done, right? So sometimes the influencer may be a mom or a dad who's been through it, who's accomplished it, and who created a better life due to the value you brought as an institution. So make sure that you don't underestimate the power of the everyday man or woman in your messaging as well.
So this chapter, what Bart tried to do is make the case that the enrollment cliff is important enough for you to take seriously to the point that it can dictate the success of your institution over the next 15 years. And with that, to learn as much as you can about it and to start strategizing on how your institution or how your marketing team representing the institution can best positively affect the outcome and the success of your incoming classes, again, for the next 10 to 15 years. Additional resources, we have interviewed Carrie Phillips in a previous episode, who is a nationally known expert on the enrollment cliff. And as Chris mentioned before, Tim Fuller, our episode with him, which is also our most listened to episode, is very informative of letting you know why the enrollment cliff is upon us and what we can do in order to combat it. Chris, I also mentioned earlier, but you can kind of shed light on that keynote address that was also entitled The Enrollment Cliff is Real, where you had three people that you had an hour-long discussion around.
Yeah, that's right. So we just closed the 2024 Cascade User Conference, and as the keynote, I invited Jamie Hunt, Allison Tercio, and Kristen Nichols to be part of a panel discussion on the demographic enrollment cliff, how to navigate it. So we made that keynote available on a new page on Hannon Hill's website in the resource section called the Demographic Enrollment Cliff Hub. It's actually called the Enrollment Hub. I'm going to share the link to that with you to share in the show notes. And that's a one-stop shop, everything higher ed marketers need to know on how to navigate their enrollment cliff successfully. So we have videos there. We have white papers there. We have blog posts there. So go there, visit that, and share it with your colleagues. You know, we want to make sure that you stick around for the long run, because education is the future. And if education thrives, so does everybody else.
Thank you, Chris. And I hope our listeners have enjoyed and got benefit from our first attempt of having a book club meeting via the podcast for Chasing Mission Fit. This was chapter one. Further episodes, the goal is to not only have a featured guest like Chris, but to also have the ability for people to ask questions and to chime in. More of that to come. For now, I want to express my high level of gratitude to Chris Raposo for joining me on the podcast and to help kick off this series. Now, again, Chris knows the next question I'm going to ask, and that is, do you have any final thoughts that you would like to share as we close out our episode?
Well, first of all, I want to say thank you very much for the opportunity. It was great chatting with you, my friend. I'm a big proponent of the podcast. I know its value, so it's an honor for me to be here. So one of the things that I think is very important, especially as online education is on the rise, make sure that inclusivity is key in your messaging, right? Because there's going to be a lot of first-generation minority students, and a lot of them may be from immigrant family where English isn't their native tongue, right? Mm-hmm. So I recently found out that the native English speaker knows about 20,000 to 30,000 words in English. In contrast, a non-native speaker may only know about 10,000 words, maybe 20,000 words, right? So you got to make sure when you communicate, it's an understandable level. It has to be between a fifth and a seventh grade reading level so everybody can understand it. And just make sure that your material reflects the language of the target demographic. So you want to speak your audience's language metaphorically and literally as you approach them.
Thank you, Chris. And for those who would like to either follow, chime, or listen into your podcast or contact you for any reason, what would the best way for them to reach out to you be? What platform do you prefer?
I prefer LinkedIn. So just find me on LinkedIn, Chris Raposo. You'll find me there. And you also find, I post a lot about my podcast, The Education Marketing Leader, there. So if you go into my feed and look at previous posts, you'll definitely find that resource as well.
Very good. Again, thank you, Chris, for being a part of this podcast episode. We'll close out by saying thanks, everyone, for joining us. The Higher Ed Marketer podcast is proudly presented by Kaler Solutions, leaders in educational marketing and branding, and by Ring Digital, your go-to experts in ad targeting, known for enhancing response and yield rates through precise ad delivery to the devices of those in your enrollment and fundraising lists. Big shout out to Rob Conlin and everyone at Westport Studios for their exceptional support. On behalf of myself, also our guest host, Chris Raposo, thank you so much for joining us.
You've been listening to The Higher Ed Marketer. To ensure that you never miss an episode, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast player. The Higher Ed Marketer is a production of Kaler Solutions and Ring Digital in partnership with Westport Studios. Views and opinions expressed by guests on The Higher Ed Marketer are their own and may not reflect the views and opinions of their organization. Know someone who's a mover and a shaker in higher ed marketing? Visit www.higheredmarketerpodcast.com and click on our Contact Us page. We'd love to have you tell us about them. Until next time.